exteriores hace suya la petición de Zedillo de que éste disfrute de la inmunidad que supuestamente correspondería por ser expresidente de México.
Juan de Dios Hernández Monge es profesor de la Universidad Autónoma de México e integrante del colectivo de abogados zapatistas en Los Ángeles. Yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Estás escuchando el Informativo Pacífica.
Los invitamos a visitar nuestro blog en pueblosinfronteras.wordpress.com.
Si deseas comunicarte con nosotros, puedes escribirnos al correo electrónico pueblosinfronteras@gmail.com.
El panel del gobierno de Carolina del Norte recomendó que ese estado pague $50,000 a cada uno de los sobrevivientes de un programa de esterilización forzada que por décadas se aplicó en esa entidad de Estados Unidos. Las víctimas eran en su mayoría afroamericanas, blancas, pobres y personas con discapacidades. Fueron sometidas a la esterilización forzada entre 1929 y 1974 bajo un programa de eugenesia similar al aplicado por el gobierno nazi en Alemania, que buscaba evitar la reproducción de personas consideradas inferiores.
At the height of eugenics, we had approximately over 30 states that had sterilization programs.
Charmaine Fuller Cooper, directora ejecutiva de la Fundación Justicia para las Víctimas de Esterilización de Carolina del Norte, declaró a la televisión pública que más de 30 estados de la Unión Americana tenían leyes de esterilización.
After World War II, North Carolina became very aggressive.
Irónicamente, cuando la mayoría de los estados decidieron suspender sus programas de eugenesia después de la Segunda Guerra Mundial, Carolina del Norte intensificó la esterilización, señaló Fuller.
We have a lot of diverse victims within North Carolina, but the common thread is that many of them were targeted because of poverty.
Dijo que el programa fue enfocado principalmente a los pobres y que la víctima más joven tenía 10 años de edad.
The youngest victim who was sterilized within North Carolina was 10 years old at the time of the sterilization.
El Congreso de Carolina del Norte debe todavía aprobar el pago de $50,000 a los sobrevivientes, lo que convertiría al estado en el primero que compensaría a las víctimas de esterilización forzada, que se cuentan en decenas de miles a lo largo de Estados Unidos. El gobierno de Carolina del Norte estima que hasta 2,000 personas esterilizadas sobreviven en ese estado. Por otra parte, un grupo de víctimas y sus familiares planean demandar $1,000,000 de compensación por su sufrimiento.
Los invitamos a visitar nuestra página blog en pueblosinfronteras.wordpress.com, donde podrá opinar y encontrar más detalles sobre las noticias de Estados Unidos, América Latina y el mundo desde una perspectiva progresista.
En Estados Unidos este miércoles las comunidades interreligiosas unidas por la justicia y la paz y una amplia gama de organizaciones sociales y políticas en rueda de prensa en la ciudad de Los Ángeles exigieron el cierre inmediato de la cárcel norteamericana de Guantánamo, fin de la tortura en la prisión de Bagram y en los penales de California. Algunos participantes vestidos de color naranja encendido y una capucha negra sobre su cabeza portaban cadenas, esposas, grilletes y todo tipo de instrumentos punitivos usados en las cárceles. El abogado Steve Rohde es titular de la CIUJP.
Guantánamo Bay remains one of the most shameful places.
Él dice que la cárcel de Guantánamo representa uno de los pasajes más vergonzosos de la historia norteamericana. Michael Rapkin tiene años defendiendo acusados gratuitamente y se ha pasado gran parte de su vida profesional visitando y defendiendo a personas detenidas en Guantánamo.
Mohammed has been in Guantánamo for 10 years. Some of those 10 years have included torture.
Él dice que Mohammed, uno de sus clientes, ha sido torturado y abusado severamente en forma tal que el gobierno estadounidense le prohibió hablar detalles sobre el trato recibido por este. La veterana abogada Ann Richardson actualmente defiende a un prisionero afgano en Guantánamo.
He was subjected to torture in Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan and again in Guantánamo.
Ella relata que su cliente fue sometido a tortura en la cárcel de Bagram en Afganistán y después en Guantánamo. Después que la Corte Suprema norteamericana declaró que los detenidos en Guantánamo podían tener una audiencia civil, su cliente todavía no puede tener acceso a gran parte de la evidencia en su contra y la parte acusadora permanece anónima. Victoria Dunn, junto con Paul Huffman, trabaja con el equipo de abogados defendiendo a Rahim Abdul Razak Al-Janko, un joven de Siria encarcelado injustamente en Guantánamo por 7 años.
En 2002, Mr. Janko was liberated from Sarpusa prison, where he had been incarcerated and tortured by the Taliban. However, he was then mistaken for a terrorist.
Ella dice que su cliente Al-Janko fue liberado de la cárcel de Sarpusa, donde había estado prisionero de los talibanes, pero que después los soldados norteamericanos lo confundieron con un terrorista y lo enviaron a Guantánamo. Una vez allí, fue sometido a interrogaciones brutales que incluían palizas, parado por mucho tiempo, privado de su sueño, expuesto a temperaturas extremas y forzado a intentar el suicidio en varias ocasiones. Julie Gatman es directora ejecutiva del programa para víctimas de tortura. Ella dice que Los Ángeles, California, tiene la más alta concentración nacional de sobrevivientes de tortura.
We see men, women and children from all over the world whose lives have been shattered by torture. Some have been beaten, kicked.
Ella dice que su equipo ha entrado en contacto con hombres, mujeres y niños de todos los rincones del mundo cuyas vidas han sido fragmentadas por la tortura. Algunos han sido golpeados, pateados, víctimas de choques eléctricos y ahogamiento simulado con agua. Otros han sido violados sexualmente, sofocados, encarcelados, privados del sueño, comida y agua y otros forzados a ver la tortura y asesinato de sus seres queridos.
The damage that torture survivors endure is profound. Surviving torture can mean permanent pain, disfigurement, traumatic scars, and physical disability.
Gatman añade que el daño sufrido por los sobrevivientes de la tortura es profundo. Eso puede significar la desfiguración física permanente, dolor permanente, cicatrices traumáticas y deshabilidad física, caos psicológico y pesadillas constantes, estado de vegetación neurológica y depresión masiva. Esteban Ali es titular de la Barra Nacional de Abogados y defensor de los derechos de los niños y los migrantes.
Not only is Guantánamo a tragedy against human rights and justice, but it is also utterly unnecessary and impractical. The facts are that of the approximately 779 prisoners held at Guantánamo.
Ali dice que Guantánamo no solo es una tragedia para los derechos humanos y la justicia, sino también innecesario e impráctico. Solo basta notar que de los 770 detenidos en Guantánamo, solo quedan 171. La mayoría fueron enviados a otros países y al llegar allá, muchos fueron liberados. Y un grupo de tarea del mismo gobierno norteamericano recomendó que 126 de los 171 restantes fueran liberados. Kendra Castañeda es una activista defensora de los derechos de los presos en California.
They've been in there with no windows, no sunlight, concrete walls, no human contact.
Hablando de los prisioneros de California, Castañeda dice que centenares de ellos están en confinamiento solitario en cuartos pequeños sin ventanas, sin la luz del sol y sin contacto humano. Algunos por 5 o 15 años, cientos de hombres viviendo así por más de 25 años y unos cuantos por 40 años. Dennis Lewis, profesor, doctor, veterano defensor de los derechos humanos, uno de los promotores del desafuero contra el expresidente George Bush y autor del libro Globalización y la demolición de la sociedad.
In the war on terror, people whom the government dislikes, both actual terrorists and those who are merely dissenters.
Él dice que en la guerra contra el terrorismo, la gente que le cae mal al gobierno, verdaderos terroristas u otros que solo son disidentes que planean hablar críticamente o en reuniones o meramente solo pensando críticamente, y hasta los observadores, son catalogados como enemigos del Estado.
The rise of neoliberal policies, free market fundamentalism, which...
El escritor explica que cuando los de arriba empiezan a aplicar profundas medidas neoliberales, despojando a todos de lo poco que tienen, eso los convierte en rebeldes, y con el propósito de mantener control social, deben usarse medidas coercitivas para tener a la gente aplastada. Los tristemente célebres programa Fénix en Indochina y Operación Cóndor en América Latina ahora se han convertido en rendición extraordinaria, o sea, el secuestro, encarcelamiento, tortura y desaparición de los llamados sospechosos de terrorismo en Los Ángeles. Yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento al diario La Jornada, a Telesur y al portal olafrica.com. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's Bathurst Spears Broadside, January 12th, 2012 edition. Stay tuned. We got lots of audio to play, and who knows, maybe some of your audio will be coming into the studio too. I'll be right back. Let's have a little from Workin' by Studs Terkel.
He builds a house with his hands. 30 years go by, it stands where nothing stood. A house of stone, the mason sleeps real good. He does his work day flies. Quitting time's a big surprise. And then it's one more stone to get just right. It's always one more stone before the night. Every house he builds, every stone he lays, it's not just making money and counting off the days. He builds a house with his hands. 100 years go by, it stands. It tells you who he was. A life goes fast, but the work a mason does, it's made to last. The work a mason does, it's made to
the bushes go.
Boing.
You watch the bushes go.
Boing.
And that was Two from Working, an 80s musical. I know some of you love musicals, which has got a lot of, it's got a lot of heart. It's got a lot of Studs Terkel. So I'm going to be playing some of that tonight as I go through the show. Welcome to Bathurst Spears Broadsides. For all of you, who haven't been here before, and all of you have, welcome back. This is a two-hour show which kind of updates a rather specific continuing struggle around civil rights for homeless people in Santa Cruz and allied struggles. Occupy Santa Cruz and Occupy Wall Street has been particularly a part of that for the last 3 months. In fact, it has prompted more homeless activism here and more allies than, during any comparable period in the last 20 years. Although we've had stronger homeless protests at different times that independently arose. When Food Not Bombs was created, when Homes Not Jails was created, when Jane Immler's struggles in the mid-80s were going on for to end the sleeping and camping ordinance has been established cold and rainy night shelter. She was just able to do the second, not the first. But she rallied a lot of people behind her, created new organizations like the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which we ultimately kind of devolved in the Citizens Committee to exploit the homeless or ignore the homeless. At least that was my satirical take on it towards the end of its active phase. But I do follow Occupy Santa Cruz a lot. I attend its general assemblies at least a couple times a week. There's one tonight at 6 o'clock, even as I'm speaking, on the steps of the county building. It becomes illegal at 7 o'clock, thanks to Susan Mariello, Chief Administrative Officer at the county, who has unilaterally decided to post no trespass signs all around the county property simply to specifically crush Occupy Santa Cruz. She hasn't told me that. It's not been any documents I've discovered, but that seems to be the only explanation for it. There isn't a major crime wave around the county building. Occupy Santa Cruz has been crushed by repressive police and deputy behavior already in terms of its visible presence. Now it seems like there's a kind of a spiteful determination not even to allow people sort of elementary rights to hold up protest signs at night on that property. It's a kind of a strange proprietary selfishness or arrogance, or I don't know quite what to call it, but the county authorities are behaving like the people in power always do when they have this kind of hubris, this arrogance of power. And it's something that the people have to stand up to. And that's one of the things that's been happening with a guy called Gary Johnson, who you can read about on Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org. I've been writing about him. He is in jail right now, as I understand it. He was arrested last week, as I reported, for lodging, illegal lodging, the catch-all statute being used to crush Occupy Santa Cruz and prior protests like Peace Camp 2010, which assert the right of homeless people to sleep, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere, and the right of people to protest in front of the county building and to petition their government for redress of grievances at all hours, not subject to the whims of bureaucrats or the passions of the police department and the deputies. So I've written a story about that indefinite detention Santa Cruz style, sleep criminal Gary Johnson held on $5,000 bail. That's, you can find that on Indie Bay, santacruzindiemedia.org. I wrote an update today, which unfortunately for some reason didn't get posted or disappeared. Probably was my mistake somewhere along the line. I don't know if I'm going to bother to rewrite what I wrote. But what I wrote was, the update was that on Tuesday, Gary Johnson went to court, the court of John Gallagher, the same wretched judge who sentenced Gary and Ed Fry to 6 months in jail for the same crime, 647E, last summer, which was peacefully protesting with signs on the steps of the county building in a way that offended county authorities, but actually produced no other real criminal behavior. I mean, they didn't charge them with vandalizing the property or defecating or urinating. Indeed, Ed Fry brought a porta potty for the first time to these protests, and maintained it every night and took it away in the day so as not to offend the sensibilities or nostrils of people coming to the courthouse. But nonetheless, they were convicted, sentenced to 6 months in jail, and they are currently appealing that sentence, having spent 2 weeks in jail, but they're out on bail. Initially, the bail was $50,000 on a kind of vindictive move by Judge Gallagher, outrageous vindictive move, which he corrected 2 weeks later when it was pointed out that the bail schedule was $130. So he'd sort of overshot by a factor of 200, or actually it's more like 300 or 400. He was like $49,870 too high in his bail. Anyway, Ed and Gary got out on appeal, but Gary decided when the county not only continued busting people at Occupy Santa Cruz for this same pseudo-crime, so-called lodging, which means essentially whatever the deputies decide it means, and it's... Gallagher said it was lodging is sleep, but if you want to be more accurate, you say lodging includes sleep. But there wasn't much proof that there was any lodging going on for the people who he convicted, nor is there proof that the person being charged and coming up next for trial, Linda LeMaster, still from that era of a year and a half ago, was lodging. She came there one night with a sign to help somebody who had a case of pneumonia, Chris Doyen, or such was her understanding, to keep him warm and to take care of him. And she was accused of lodging, which, of course, is preposterous and should never have gone to court. It shows you the kind of rigid bureaucratic aspect we have going on here in Santa Cruz, or perhaps simply a vindictive district attorney and a determination to stop such protests before they start, understanding that there is a constant raw wound here with the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, with the criminalization of homeless people through numerous other ordinances and police practices in Santa Cruz, such as officers roaming the streets giving people tickets for sitting too close to a building or even a vacant building, even a building at night that nobody is doing any shopping in. And they'll say, oh, it's the law. Well, the Constitution and basic human rights are also, as far as I'm concerned, the higher law and the reality of what this community needs to pay attention to and to respect, and not the, the word comes to mind, the bourgeois dictates of a narrow-minded merchant class that somehow thinks criminalizing a whole class of people is a way to improve their business and is justified either economically or morally or spiritually or constitutionally. I don't think it is. Anyway, Gary's in jail, and when he went to court on Tuesday to answer for this charge of sleeping on a bench without any bedding, because they, police on prior occasions, deputies actually, had taken his bedding and he hadn't gotten it back. I think at one point he finally did get it back, and I don't know if he had it that night the last time he was arrested, but on a number of occasions he didn't, and you can see him pictured on the bench in a nice series of photographs by Alex DeRosi if you go to Santa Cruz Indy Media. And he was arrested and held on $5,000 bail. I think he was arrested on Friday, and he was taken to court on Tuesday morning in the court of John Gallagher again, who he I think unwisely did not disqualify. He was represented by attorney Ed Fry, which again I think is a mistake, not because Ed is a bad attorney, but because he's an overworked attorney and a public defender is needed in these cases. We need to bring in as many public defenders as possible. And every single person, unfortunately, who is arrested by the police needs to keep going back and doing it again until they're taken to court, because what the authorities have been doing is they've been harassing people with citations and arrests. When people show up in court, there's no charge. But if you are arrested and held in custody until the court date, which they have to give you within 48 hours or 72 if it's over a weekend, now they can arrest you on early Friday morning and hold you till Tuesday morning. So that's quite a long stretch if you're trying to hold down a job or you have other responsibilities. So that's certainly a consideration. But if you are held in custody, you are given a court date at the end of your custody, not at a future time, which they can dismiss. And you show up in court, and then they have to face the fact that they have to appoint a public defender, they have to go through the rigor of a jury trial. And Gary is probably going to go to a jury trial, but I think, again, an unfortunate decision was he was it was decided there should be a demurrer hearing first. That was a decision by Ed and Gary, Ed Fry as attorney and Gary, in order to challenge the constitutionality of the law, which would seem to make sense because certainly 647E, the lodging law as applied to political protesters, is not constitutional, particularly in front of a government building, which is the most obvious spot where protest is appropriate and needs to be not only permitted, but attempts to crack down on it or break it up need to be punished, need to be prohibited. We should be jailing the deputies and the chief county administrative officer, Susan Mariello, and Sheriff Mark Phil Wowak. I keep remembering Mark Tracy from olden times, but we got Phil Wowak now. You know, instead of going after their victims. But, of course, that's not what the system does. And that's the whole reason, I think, for the nationwide Occupy movement, that the system itself is fundamentally corrupted, fundamentally a kind of an authoritarian machine that's turned against the people anytime they challenge its injustices. And it remains to be seen how we can get together again to end this whole thing, to start something new and better. And that is what people are perhaps talking about in their own way in small projects, opposing foreclosures, defending those who are in jail, trying to rouse the community to stand up for justice for people being charged unfair rents, for people losing their jobs, for people who are suffering the fact that others who are very wealthy aren't being taxed at all, and that the elections are sham elections. All these issues are issues that we know are real. In the middle of this bogus election campaign year where no real issues are being discussed at all, we have war and bankster criminality running rampant, and, of course, millions and millions of dollars being poured into campaigns that have no discussion of these issues, a possible exception of Ron Paul, who is raising these issues. Good for him. Not that I support any particular candidate at all in this situation. I certainly support the fact that he's raising the issues of getting out of these foreign wars and of ending the Patriot Act, the drug war, and other things at a national level. Don't support his criminalization of women who choose to have an abortion. I don't support other things that he says. But he's got he certainly has the willingness to buck the Republican Party, to buck the Democratic Party, and to stand up on issues that are really basic, like the need to end the imperialism that is destroying, well, that is oppressing people throughout the world and is bankrupting the country. So, Gary Johnson is still in jail on a $5,000 bail. If you want to get in touch with him, the best thing to do is to contact his lawyer, Ed Fry, whose phone number is 479-8911. I put that up earlier at IndieBay. Didn't do that, but I'll have to try to put that up again. I discussed the fact that Gary is really a subject to indefinite detention. You say, well, not really, because he goes to trial, if not in a month. You're allowed, if you are charged with a misdemeanor in this county, in the state, you have right to go to trial within 30 days if you're in custody, 45 if you're out of custody, unless you postpone it yourself by, let's say, challenging the ordinance, the constitutionality of the ordinance. And that's what Ed Fry is doing. I've suggested to him and to Gary, I don't think this is a wise idea, not so much because it isn't, because it's a constitutional ordinance, I don't think it is, but because the same judge is going to be heard in front of Judge John Gallagher has already ruled last year that it is not, he regards it as constitutional. It's not going to be an issue for him at all. If you want to read my whole screed on that, you can go to Santa Cruz Indie Media, indefinite detention, Santa Cruz style, sleep criminal Gary Johnson held on $5,000 bail, and I'll probably be posting an update on that too. Well, in order to show that not everybody is silent on this issue, a number of people came to the Huff meeting on Wednesday. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a group concerned with these civil rights violations, not just against Gary Johnson, but against all homeless people in this city that face, well, in theory, they face up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine for falling asleep if D.A. Bob Lee or City Attorney John Barisoni decide to prosecute them. So if they get political, if they start talking about these issues and show up at places like City Hall and roll out a sleeping bag, they may find themselves charged with 647E. Otherwise, they'll get charged with something like 6.36010A, which is a municipal code that talks about it being illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night on any and all public property, or even in your own private vehicle parked on public property. That's so-called sleeping ban, a section of the camping ordinance. And that's something, of course, that faces 1,500 to 2,000 people. About 100 people can go to the armory if they want to deal with the conditions there. And some do, and some are happy with that situation, or at least satisfied with it. But, of course, that leaves 95% of the homeless people who are outside who face the constant threat of a citation. If they want to get on a waiting list, supposedly any citations they issue will be dismissed. But they're still going to have to be searched. Their property may be seized. They may be forced to pick up their belongings and leave and go where? They don't know. The police don't tell them. There are no safe places. They're told, go to the homeless service center, but that homeless service center isn't open at night. You have to get on a waiting list. It'll take you 2 to 6 weeks. In fact, this is what Ed Fry told John Gallagher in court, the judge, in defending Gary Johnson, saying Gary had no place to go. And Gary was willing to meet the conditions, obey all laws, which I suppose meant, I don't know, leaving the city in order to go to sleep, or possibly finding someone who had, on his couch he could crash. And this, you can say, well, what's wrong with that? Go do that. Well, try doing it for any length of time and see how long your support system holds out for doing that. It is, try holding a job or engaging in any meaningful activity over that period of time when you're spending your time trying to hold together your housing and your food situation and, of course, dealing with any court dates that may have come up as you crossed through their legal labyrinth. So there was a protest on noon Wednesday, and apparently there's going to be one every noon, supporting Gary, and it was called, well, they're calling it Noise at Noon, and it's organized by some Occupy Santa Cruz folks who came to the Huff meeting and supported by Huff, and I'm going to play some tape from that particular shindig so you can kind of see what you missed. It was small. There were only about 10 folks there. But it was spirited, and you get to hear some of that spirit.
So we're now having a four-broadcast interview here with...
Actually, before the protest, my apologies, there's going to be a brief interview with a guy called Brian Parquette, who had a very persuasive series of photographs and a rather... unfortunate story to tell, but one that speaks to police misconduct downtown, if it's accurate. It seemed pretty persuasive to me when I was hearing it and viewing the photos, and he later sent me the photos online showing an officer, Warren, giving citations to him at a parking meter that he had put money into when he parked his motorbike there, and he felt Warren was pursuing him illegally. Let's hear what he has to say.
And Brian, we're down here on Pacific Avenue, and it's about 11:45 on the 10th of January, 2012. You have just shown me on your iPhone, perhaps that's what it is.
Android.
On your Android, a photo of a parking meter and a parking ticket, a police officer, Officer Warren, and yourself. I guess you're not in the picture, but a series of photos that seem to indicate that you were being ticketed on a meter that still had money on it.
Yeah, I was sitting on my scooter, reading my Kindle, and drinking some coffee from Pete's, and the cops drove around the corner. My meter expired, so then I went and put money in the meter, and they came back and wrote me a ticket. while I'm sitting on my scooter.
Now, are they claiming that you were feeding the meter in some... I don't think it's illegal to do that, but I don't know for sure what the current law is regarding... Are you allowed, after your meter has expired, to put more money in the meter, or are you required to move to another meter?
I don't know.
I don't either. I'll have to ask a police officer, which is not necessarily the best thing to do.
I was there for about an hour.
Right, so... I think Mr. Twister, of course, made this an issue about 15, 16 years ago, and he was either arrested or cited or fined for walking around in front of meter maids and putting money in the meters, and there was apparently the city council in embarrassment over the national publicity around this backed off. Now, I'm not sure if they backed off in terms of the case you're bringing up.
Well, I was ticketed while I had money in the meter.
Right, but the question is, did you feed the meter beyond the allowed time? I guess they have to prove it was beyond the allowed time, because though you're allowed to be there for an hour, unless they had you been there for the length of time of the meter.
I don't know. I put some money in the meter. The meter went red, so I went and put some more money in the meter.
Where were you parked?
On Cooper Street, across the street from Nextbase.
It sounds like it's a two-hour meter.
No, it sounds like it's harassment from Nextbase.
It's a two-hour meter, right?
Hey. Yeah.
And had you been there for 2 hours?
No.
Well, then it was an illegitimate move on the part of the police.
Well, it was obvious. I got photographs that show them ticketing me while the meter's green.
Right. But had you, let's say, been there for 2 hours and then put in more money after the two-hour period, they could claim in court you can't feed the meter beyond 2 hours, which may or may not be something you can do. But you weren't there for 2 hours, so it's not an issue.
No, it's not an issue.
Right. But what apparently is an issue is that could it be that Officer Warren doesn't like you?
Well, that's abundantly obvious.
Now, you say there's been another incident where you were ticketed for sitting on a bench when you were standing next to the bench?
Yeah, that was a while back. I don't know, a year or two years ago.
You just mentioned it a moment ago. That's why I brought it up.
I was standing next to the bench, and I got a ticket for sitting on the bench by Officer Warren.
And why? You mean sitting for more than an hour on the bench? Because it's not illegal to sit on a bench.
Sitting more than an hour on the bench.
Well, that's a serious crime, Brian.
I was standing when the guy arrived to give me a ticket. Compliments of Jeremy Neer.
The Nextbase fellow across the street?
Yeah.
Now, that Nextbase has moved, yes? It's no longer in that building?
No, it's still up there.
Still up there. How are you and Jeremy getting along these days?
Well, she hasn't been bothering me, but then again, he came out to watch me get a ticket, so I wonder whether he had something to do with it.
And this ticket was this morning? This ticket involving the parking meter?
Yeah.
And this morning, in this case, was Wednesday, January 11th, yesterday.
Are you going to be taking this to an administrative hearing?
I don't know. I don't know how to do that. I'm going to fill out this thing. I went to City Hall and talked to the city manager, and he gave me some paperwork to fill out.
And you talked to Martine Bernal?
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear he's at least somewhat accessible. What's your impression of Bernal?
Seems like a really nice guy.
Really nice guy, and also a person doesn't mind destroying the River Street campground. But also the most powerful figure in the city and the most highly paid.
Actually, the San Lorenzo campground I'm talking about, that's the famous December 8th destruction of the campground around the corner from the Occupy Santa Cruz Occudome and the General Assembly meeting place in front of the courthouse, where they're actually meeting now, although I don't think they have an Occudome up anymore.
I don't know anything about that. All I know is that this officer is, like, going above and beyond the call of duty and being malicious.
If your facts are accurate, it sounds like, and you've shown me some pictures on your Android here, and I'm wondering if that isn't just the case. Anything else you want to say?
There's nothing to say. I got the evidence right here on my Android.
So are you going to post that online, perhaps?
Yeah, more than likely.
And where can people find it?
I don't know yet.
Maybe IndieBay?
I don't know.
If you let me know, I'll let them know.
I'll send you some copies.
Thank you. And we've been talking with
Brian Parkett.
And Brian has sent me some of the photos, and they're pretty good photos. Now I have to find someone who's competent enough to put them up, which I seem to be not very good at. But maybe they'll go up, and you'll be able to see the claims of Brian, the visual evidence that he feels indicates harassment and false ticketing by Officer Warren.
Thanks, Brian. Sorry this happened to you, man.
Perhaps some collusion by Jeremy of Next Space, who, along with former mayor and councilmember Ryan Coonerty, opened up that business and has been... in the past, we've talked about his harassment of Brian Parkett and actually documented some of that.
So it's the 11th of January, 2012, and I'm walking with a mighty crew of seven who are a sort of a noise at noon rally. And the for those who want to, we're at the jail, the county jail, making noise in favor of the prisoners who are... And we are on public property. There are, all of us are, we're all boys here, though we had at least one woman with us earlier. I think we had about 10. We've been reduced to 7 after walking from Joe's Pizza, where we have been holding meetings every 10 a.m. at Hess Huff. Now, of course, we'll be moving to the Sub Rosa.
Something I want to mention. Normally, Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, meets every Wednesday at the Joe's Pizza. It has been meeting there. Great place, right downtown, centrally located. Good coffee, friendly staff. But Joe, the owner, unobserving us at a relatively large meeting today, with only a few of us eating food, but all of us drinking coffee, which we'd purchased there, he insisted that in the future any such meeting would require people to buy food. And that meant, of course, that we would have to move because people who are coming to the homeless meeting cannot afford to buy a meal at Joe's Pizza. It's not going to happen. And Joe said the reason he wanted and needed to do this was because he was having bad business, and that he, if the business weren't so bad, he could be more generous. And of course, the irony, of course, is he's not being generous. He's being short-sighted and foolish by doing this, because there's generally very few people there in the morning on Wednesday morning. We're the largest group there. We pay money, and it's just unfortunate. But that's as it goes. If those who are interested, come to the Sub Rosa Cafe on Wednesday. That's where we're going to be. That's up the street at 703 Pacific. It's kind of kitty corner, a block away from the Saturn Cafe, a block beyond the Laurel and Pacific. And maybe we'll see you there at 10 o'clock on Wednesday mornings. Anyway, back to the noise protest at the jail demanding freedom for Gary Johnson.
Gary Johnson! That's the noise of the noisemakers. In solidarity. And here come the deputies. No, that's just the wind blowing the leaves of the door. And we are standing actually in the area right where the sheriffs and police leave off. Well, right outside the area, people are left off from squad cars who are brought in. And we have Steve Blade, Chanette Fry, and a variety of people. We have Bike Lock Mike and Tom and Angel and others here. Myself. Protesting. Staff. And there are actually a couple of staff watching, about to close the door. And one of the protesters is hooded, giving him a sort of a classical gorilla look. And we have an aspiring politician making a phone call and striking quite a pose here at the side of the protest. He's pausing for a moment to engage in business. A couple of other activists are showing up. We're actually later heading for D.C. on a trip to, I guess, Occupy Congress. So you two are heading for
D.C.
You're heading for Washington, D.C. to go through every Occupy on the way and spend
actually,
time.
Actually, we're taking a train, so we will be...
zipping past the city.
Yes, 80 hours.
Occupy Amtrak, perhaps?
Yeah, Occupy the Amtrak.
More people occupying as well on the way.
And again, we're talking with...
Kimberly.
And...
Ro.
rush. And so you guys think somehow that Congress is going to respond to your tender entreaties?
Yes, in fact, they have no options. There are no camps left in any surrounding areas or any distant areas from D.C. So I have a strong feeling this occupation will be quite large, and I highly doubt it'll be moved.
Will they occupy, or will they simply come and go?
I believe it'll turn into a formal occupation.
Interesting. And you'll be there?
Yes.
On the scene?
We will be there on the scene reporting to Santa Cruz on Facebook and through phone on contact. So
we're going to figure out a way to live stream. I will be posting pictures and videos of our travels.
Very good. And where can people go to follow this adventure?
I think my best bet right as of right now, all the info, I will relate it from my Facebook to Occupy Santa Cruz Facebook page and can get the information from there. That's where I will be posting videos and pictures and stuff like that, and the information for the live stream once we have that information.
And you, Kim?
I'll be bringing my computer and working on networking, so I'll be getting information from all the occupiers that are at D.C., including D.C. Occupation and Wall Street, I assume will be there. So we'll have a strong network between Santa Cruz and those other occupiers in solidarity with this whole movement. So I will be posting things on Facebook as well, and I'll have my computer. We'll find Wi-Fi, and yeah, so it'll be interesting.
So the first place to go is Occupy Santa Cruz Facebook, perhaps.
Yeah, and Occupy Santa Cruz Facebook, our own personal Facebook, OccupySantaCruz.org is another good website to be checking. The only thing about that is it has to be approved by the media to be posted, so I don't know in what advanced time that they can...
You'll be encouraging the Congress and Obama to come visit Santa Cruz and visit Gary Johnson in jail.
Yes, and also we will be encouraging them to repeal the NDAA Act.
Well, we're looking at about four staff members who work...
And the NDAA Act, of course, is the MDAA Act is the... Military Defense Appropriation Act, which provides for indefinite detention for those Fuhrer Obama or any future Fuhrer decides are terrorist suspects, held without charge, held without limit, held without any kind of accountability, apparently. Again, this is a protest yesterday at the Santa Cruz County Jail, initially at the side of the jail where you come and the police cars come and drive in and leave prisoners off, and actually that's kind of, it looked like the kitchen staff came out and talked to us. And then we walked around to the Blaine Street Jail, the women's section of the jail, and I have to say it was very foreboding and forbidding and had a vacant quality. There was we saw a deputy occasionally, but they were personnel leaving. They did not pay any attention to us whatsoever, although there are little intercom systems that some of the protesters tried to communicate with the people inside on. There was no response from anyone inside. So instead, I guess there was simply a direct attempt to communicate through the volume of our noise to inmates inside to encourage them, not just Gary Johnson, but anybody being held there illegally, unconstitutionally, or under the laws that criminalize poor people. The drug war laws are an example of a broad category of laws that do that, and there are plenty of others.
Out here talking with Angel, looked like cooks or something, or maintenance personnel. Angel, did you have an interesting conversation with these folks?
Yes, I did.
What was the substance of that conversation?
Actually, I was...
The folks Angel talked to were several, looked like people who were cleaning, who appeared to be... Latina folks, there are a couple of men too who came out. They were had sort of uniforms. They weren't deputy type uniforms, but they had sort of, they looked like they were maybe kitchen staff almost.
Quite pleased and amazed to hear that at least one of the inmates here is aware of what the Indefinite Detention Act is, what it stipulates, and hopefully that person will get back in there and, bring to the awareness of the inmates what's going on, what they're doing to United States citizens out here.
And you're talking about, of course, the Military Defense Appropriation Act, which includes an actual explicit provision for indefinite detention, whereas, in fact, here in Santa Cruz, you have de facto indefinite detention for poor people who can't afford to pay the bail.
Yeah. Yeah, and as a matter of fact, I don't think it's just going to be... I don't think it's just going to be there for the military. I also think that the local law enforcement are going to incorporate that into their bullshit stipulation, their policies, and be able to try to go after citizens and detain them indefinitely as well.
And again, looking back at the story I wrote, Indefinite Detention for Gary Johnson, it's not technically indefinite detention. I mean, Gary Johnson's going to be held for a month until his demurrer hearing, and then he'll be held for another month until his trial, and then he'll be tried, found guilty, and he'll be sentenced to so many months in jail, and he'll be held during that period of time, and then he'll come out, and if he sleeps again on the county area in trying to protest in a protest of the laws that criminalize sleeping in Santa Cruz, he'll be held again, and the process will repeat itself, perhaps more emphatically. That isn't technically indefinite detention, because there's a limited period of time to each of those detentions. But in fact, in a city where there is no legal place for homeless people to sleep, it is a crime to do something that is an essential human function. And because of that, that will keep recurring every night, regardless. And people will face that kind of potential prosecution and persecution every night. And that does go on into the indefinite future. So it can be said that if you hide out or get out, what I describe as the city council's approach to how to deal with this whole problem is, and that's their solution, They pretend to have a homeless shelter, but that's for public consumption. There's no meaningful shelter for the overwhelming majority of people in this city who are homeless or people experiencing homelessness. And in spite of all the sugared words you hear from Mayor Don Lane, and there are plenty of them, and in fact enough to make him very unpopular with people who don't like even discussing a homelessness in positive terms, in the sense of saying that its solutions are an important thing, that homeless people aren't just bums who face a bed of roses and just are having a gay old time while the rest of the community is suffering. Lane properly points out, the mayor properly points out, that's not true. But then, of course, when he goes to take action as mayor, more accurately, when he takes no action as mayor, other than urging people to support nonprofit solutions and national solutions and partnership with other groups, instead of dealing with the laws that he voted for that criminalize homeless people in Santa Cruz, it's such blatant hypocrisy that it gives me a headache. So, and there was an article in tomorrow's paper, I think it is. Maybe it's today's paper. If you go online to the Sentinel, always an ordeal. Well, not so much an ordeal, but not my favorite place to go. Let's see if we can find that website, though. Having a little trouble doing that. There is an editorial by Don Miller, who's the editor of the Sentinel. He does a blog about Don Lane. He kind of defends Don Lane, not because he agrees with him, but because he thinks poor Don is being criticized too much by, by harsh critics. And I'm looking for it I guess it was in today's paper, which... is no longer up. Sentinel has tomorrow's paper up now. If you go to the website, you'll find they skip ahead, or they're trying to be very forward-looking. How's that positive way of viewing it? Yeah, it's editor's blog, The Mayor and Santa Cruz is Homeless. And he talks, Miller Talk defends Lane, and I don't know why I'm even mentioning this, because it's not really terribly relevant to anything. But you can read even the Sentinel. I think he wants to defend a public official who probably he's defending Lane, because Lane isn't proposing anything real in terms of changing the situation of homeless people who are being criminalized and either threatened with jail like Gary Johnson is, or actually in jail. But, you know, so therefore, why, you know, I think Miller likes the idea of Lane's, his motives are pure, he says, and he came into this issue being really clear that he was a homeless advocate. But unfortunately, Miller's column, just like Lane's speeches, give the impression that Lane is some kind of a homeless advocate. He's not. He's a poverty crat. He's a homeless bureaucrat. He's a politician who maybe you might regard him as self-deluded. You might regard him as using the issue. I tend to believe he's self-deluded on this, and also simply unwilling to take unpopular stands because he's more concerned with his electability than he is with the issue, even though he claims to be the big partisan of the issue, which is why I am so insistent on calling him a hypocrite. So he isn't a sincere man in that sense. I mean, I don't believe he is sufficiently, I don't think he's blind to the fact that he doesn't deny that he's voted for every anti-homeless criminalization measure that's come down the pike, with a very few exceptions. One of them was the panhandling law. He supported the panhandling criminalization of homeless people down the line, except he felt that if you have dogs on the mall, there shouldn't be a specific criminalization measure for people. Homeless people should be allowed to keep their dogs if they're panhandling, provided they jump through all the other hoops they have to do. You can't do it after dark. You can't do it in a group of two. You can't do it on 95% of the sidewalks downtown and almost 100% of the sidewalks anywhere else in town that's anywhere near a business district or near a building or near a fence or near a crosswalk or near an intersection, a kiosk, a telephone, a bench, you name it. So he supports anti-homeless laws, which I think we demonstrated when we had an interview with him a week ago. Anyway, Don Miller goes into a long description of how we should, you know, how Don is reachable by phone. And actually, Don actually gives a response. Don Lane gives a response. And he's, Miller raises this bogus issue where the city's well-known tolerance, compassion, and services only exacerbating the situation of homelessness here. Well, it's exacerbating the bigots, and the city has no well-known tolerance, compassion, and services. It has lack of services, hypocrisy, and the semblance of compassion. Otherwise, they wouldn't be destroying homeless campgrounds and providing no alternatives. I mean, it's just complete bullshit. And I have to keep saying so because I keep reading it in the paper, and I can't stand it when I read it in the paper. So there are some people who make a great noise when they hear this, even if the noise is to these large, imposing, gloomy public jail buildings. Let's hear a little more from the demonstration yesterday.
Thank you. We've been talking with Angel. Thank you, Angel.
So it's
about 12:30, and a man with a violin, or is it a viola? I don't know. Has shown up. What's your name, violinist, for our police record?
Strider.
Strider?
Yes, sir.
And what are you going to play for us today? Anything?
I have no idea.
Get past these noisemakers. Perhaps a lyrical...
Hey!
No breaking through. A lyrical tune. We have a violinist who's going to play a little something. I'm sorry.
What to play?
And we'll see what comes out of this man's violin. We have a violinist, we have a conga player, we have several people who are on pot, or I should say striking pots with their with rocks. And here you have a little of the violin. Or perhaps fiddler might be a better way to put it. There you have it. A man with
Is he just fiddling around? We'll find out. Well, the noise-making crew has moved around to the women's side of the county jail on Blaine Street. I believe it's Blaine Street. And there are about nine of us now still here. Activist Steve Blaich has gone off to do something else. I'm a very busy man. And apparently over here, we're more audible to those inside, or at least that seems to be the rumor. The noise is intense for such a small group. We only have, as I said, nine people, and we have, I would say, three, four, five pots or drums, one violin, and then one guy who's talking into his tape recorder, and one guy with a hat who's simply making commentary, and one woman jingling her keys. Hatman is now shaking the fence in order to produce a joyful sound, or an angry sound, perhaps. Here's the sound of a conga, wielded by none other than Ed Fry. Here's a masked gorilla with a pot. He's potting it up. I'm just listening to your sound of your... Whoa! We have the sound of keys jingling. Thank you, Key Jingler. We're going to call you Key Jingler Kim henceforth.
All right.
And here's a... And there is a loud racket going on out front. That's the sound of a piece of wood hitting the fence. Other sounds are being made. It seems clear that a small group of people can make a lot of noise if they're determined to do so. So far, no deputies have showed up to join us in the merriment.
Free Gary Johnson!
Free Gary Johnson!
We are here today.
We are here today
to show our love and support.
To show our love and support
with those unjustly.
Arrested and detained.
And we are here to support Gary Johnson.
Gary Johnson.
Revolt on the inside.
Revolt on the outside.
Thank you.
It's all pretty revolting. And for those who want to get a perspective on this that perhaps they haven't read, you can go on to Facebook and check out Angel's website. Angel, what is that website?
It's actually not a website. It's just my my username, and that would be Angels Devils. That'd be AngelsDevils. Angels Devils.
Angels Devils. Thank you. So Ed Fry has just pointed out a sign. Ed, what does that sign say?
Unauthorized communication with jail inmates is unlawful. Penal Code Section 4570.
Right, and of course, we are communicating with the entire world, and if some inmates happen to hear, what can we do?
Lead the first.
That's the First Amendment, folks, for those who have forgotten, as most of the authorities have. Now we have a symphony of different pot sounds done by strumming the fence.
The power of the pot.
Power of the pot. Thank you. Well put. Well, at least it was happening right before I turned on the machine. And you can still hear a little of this, the rippling, strumming sound of wood against metal. Metal against metal.
Okay.
We have an official coming out who tells us we can talk to someone if we want to.
I'm trying to work here. They won't give me a job because I'm homeless.
And they are
There's a brief interchange between Rush and an employee who walked out and gave us short shrift. Although a few words. And one intrepid protester has spoken to the authorities through the intercom system, stating rapidly, "Free Gary Johnson." Hard to hear some of these shouts, but sleep is not a crime, again, is an old favorite. And your comment about this Rush,
well, the money that they are spending having Gary in jail, they can have that money from the tax dollars, from the taxpayers, and put it towards the homelessness. That instead of putting them in jail, help us with that money that you're taking and wasting on, you know, tickets and courts and all that, when you could take all that money and help solve the problem.
That would be too simple, I'm afraid.
It would be,
my boy. You don't understand the complexities.
Oh, yeah.
There are many layers to this.
Yes. But I do believe if everyone would look at things like that more often, then maybe it could help.
So are you outside these days?
What?
Are you outside?
I am outside.
How are people doing now that the December 8th campground... Well, the campground was dispersed on December 8th.
Correct. And we are still... We might not have a camp, but we're still here strong as we ever were, and we're not letting our hearts be broken from all this. We're just getting stronger every day, and we will arise once again, and we're going to arise stronger.
You're here. Hey, we're talking with Rusher also, you say, one of the first in one of many foreclosure occupations is going to happen.
This is the first of many. I can't give information on where this is yet. It's not all public information, but I believe the public information can know that there are four occupants occupying a backyard right now. And
property where you've been invited by the owner?
Yes, the owner has us sleeping there right now and helping them out, and we will be putting signs up in front of the house as soon as we have permission to do so by the owner and the foreclosure committee.
How can people get more information? All of us police informants want to know how to get involved here.
Come to your local GA and talk to people that are with the foreclosure group, and they will give you all the information you need on that.
And we've been talking with...
This is Rush.
Thank you, Rush. Apparently, this is going to be a weekly event, and it'll be happening next week at the same time.
Also, I should say, I visited the foreclosed house, and it's impressively public and on a main thoroughfare. So I'm looking forward to the point at which there's going to be a very visible stop foreclosures and see the impact of what local banks, not just those evil banks far away, but local banks are doing. You know, those wonderful banks that need to be protected, particularly the vacant banks that are such sacred and valuable property that the police should mass in lines with riot gear and riot guns at the ready, and then afterward threaten people extensively with criminal prosecution for having turned the bank briefly, the vacant bank, the bank that had been vacant for 3.5 years, into a community center. Actually, I'm going to read shortly a letter that I don't think I read before online. I wrote a letter to Chief Vogel. I've split it up into two letters because the first letter was kind of long. I posted it on Occupy Santa Cruz Facebook for those who wanted to read the earlier version of it. But I think I'll read it now since it's sort of I'll read them both now. Again, I'm still working on them, but I think it's going to read something. The letters are going to read something like this. Dear Chief Vogel, two entries you signed on your police blog contain references that are disturbing. Update on takeover at 75 River Street at such and such a website, and help us ID these people from the 75 River Street takeover. Mr. Robert Norris is one of the people pictured in the group photo in the second blog post. The first blog post uses defamatory and abusive language, which seems to implicate everyone in the photos you've posted, including Mr. Norris. It includes terms and phrases that suggest criminal behavior and invite the community to so regard those individuals and to assist the police in their identification. These words include, quote, those responsible for the takeover and vandalism of the vacant building located at 75 River Street on Wednesday, November 30th, 2011, those responsible for the illegal entry and takeover, photographs of the individuals responsible for participating in this incident, suspected of being responsible for the planning, organizing, and participating in these unlawful acts. Expect to begin making arrests as soon as the warrants are issued. We expect to identify additional individuals who are responsible, and we intend to hold them accountable for their unlawful action as well. Thank the community for their assistance in helping identify those responsible for this illegal takeover. These phrases tend to indicate the people shown in the photos are presumably guilty of illegal actions and defames them. I'm one of those people pictured in what was a meeting of a general assembly inside 75 River Street. The building was open to the community. Police officers had not directed people to leave when I was in there. There were no signs indicating no trespassing. No owner or owner's agent came and advised us to go. Catherine Byers, city councilwoman, and the city manager Martine Bernal had come and addressed the General Assembly. At least I think Bernal had, and Byers had come in and visited. So the idea that everybody in these photos has to be identified as a criminal suspect is outrageous. And it is defamatory to those who are there. It's also, of course, the whole implication that the criminals are these people who are essentially opening up public space is outrageous as well. Complete turning on its head of what the real situation is. But even if you have this obsessive passion and respect and regard for the leased property of Wells Fargo Bank held vacant for 3.5 years, or is it Barry Swenson, and or is it Walter Schoenstein? I'm getting different stories as to who owns it. But in any case, it's a huge piece of property downtown that's being held vacant for investment purposes. You might say, well, you know, they can't find a tenant. These are hard times. Well, then maybe, you know, the property needs to be put to some use instead of being sitting there waiting so a corporation can make a profit. That, of course, was the point of this peaceful occupation. You may not agree with that. Many don't, feeling that they're going to occupy my house next. No, I don't think so. The point is to go after large corporate banks that are bankrupting the country and ripping off the treasury and, you know, inferentially supporting foreign wars as well, or at least that's also going on at the same time. But regardless of what you think about that issue, the idea that the police chief will criminalize people who are in that building simply because they're inside it when it was open, it's just wrong, and so wrong as to be injurious to people. I know one person in the building whose landlord then told him that he would not rent him for the next month because he regarded him as a criminal. Now, I think the landlord may have changed his mind on that issue about this person, but that kind of reaction is the kind of thing, the kind of hysteria that Police Chief Vogel was apparently trying to encourage in the community. And it saddens me because I used to have a friendly regard for Vogel when he was an officer on the beat. I mean, he was a police officer who enforced the sleeping ban, and in his own way he was bad as anybody else in that department, engaging in following orders of that kind that hurt poor people. You know, I know, it's just his job. Yeah, that's the excuse that's used throughout history. But as a person, he did some positive things at certain points, small positive things that I noticed. I mean, when he was ordered to remove people from city council, he was quite candid that this had been told to him in advance by the mayor, what seemed like an inappropriate move. Now, he didn't refused to do it, perhaps as he should have, because the mayor is not supposed to be removing people from city council that he doesn't like the testimony of, or that he has objections to, and particularly not fingering them in advance, as Mayor Keith Sugar did in 2000, regarding activist James Ney in a March City Council meeting, which I talked about, I'm pretty sure, I imagine, at that time on one of my shows. But Vogel did discuss it. I mean, he wasn't afraid to be honest about what he had done or what others had said. Maybe he just didn't like Sugar, and that was one of his motivations. But he's gotten much worse. You know, he's done the DIY, you know, spying on people in 2005, ordering the spying, and then so investigating his own ordering of the spying and exonerating himself, which was sort of a comic moment in the Santa Cruz Police Department's history, covered by none other than the Santa Cruz Metro, now the Santa Cruz Weekly. And one of their rare actually covering an issue in Santa Cruz with some insight and some, satirical force. Anyway, this is a letter to Vogel that I'm asking an attorney to send. It says, please issue an immediate clarification to any who may have already read this blog that those pictured in the photos you've posted are not facing charges, real or contemplated, for their peaceful public assembly there. Please delete any suggestion that those involved in the photographs are guilty of or are suspected of criminal behavior for the behavior in any of the photos. This can be done by issuing a new blog entry acknowledging the error as well as amending and clearly correcting the earlier blogs. It is my understanding, as I mentioned before, that City Manager Martine Bernal was also present in the 75 River Street building at different times, as with Councilmember Catherine Byers, members of the media, and many members of the general public. While police were present at the scene, there were no signs posted suggesting it was a no trespassing zone, nor is it clear that police officers directed those present in the photos not to enter. Hence, to state that those in the photos are criminal suspects who need identifying is a form of libel that damages them. The fact that Mr. Norris, for example, is a frequent critic of your department's policies does not relieve you of the responsibility of accuracy in your public statements, nor liability for making false and defamatory accusations. He is also in concern with the threatening behavior by two officers who were videoing the peaceful protest at 75 River Street on the afternoon of November 30th. When Mr. Norris approached them in their unmarked police car in his capacity as a Free Radio Santa Cruz reporter, they addressed him by name and told him they'd be investigating him later in apparent retaliation for his media inquiry and audioing. Please forward the names of these two officers so Mr. Norris can file a formal complaint against them for this behavior. Please advise me ASAP of your willingness to print a clear retraction of the statements mentioned above and when that will happen. That is, say, the statements on the blog. Mr. Norris has also asked that you specify the nature of the emergency on December 8th that required 90 to 120 police officers to uproot a survival campground of more than 200 people, destroying their winter protective gear with a federal court case still pending for hearing a month later. In the event that you have or decline to give any specific description of the emergency, please treat this as a Public Records Act request seeking access to view and hear any and all documents, video, audio, and other records referencing or mentioning the campground at San Lorenzo Park associated with Occupy Santa Cruz from November 27th to December 31st. Please provide a clear statement or provide access to view or hear the documents involved. And that, in other words, says either clarify what the public emergency was at this campground, which he refused to do, or just provide us with access to all the documents that might enable us to puzzle out just what that emergency was that required short-circuiting a federal court hearing, which is what Danette Shoemaker and Chief Vogel and City Manager Martine Bernal and then-Mayor Ryan Coonerty and Vice Mayor Don Lane did on that occasion, destroying the property, the campground, the sleeping space of 200 people. and not providing them with any real alternatives. That was my first letter to Vogel, and it has not been finalized. It's still got a few kinks in it, as you can hear. Usually I just send things off kinks and all, but I'm trying to do this a little differently. The second one is, Dear Chief Vogel, and this is from an attorney, I am advised that you personally confronted Mr. Norris with accusations of criminal behavior at River Street when he attempted to inquire into the whereabouts of homeless survival gear seized and apparently discarded under the direction of your officers on December 8th. And this is something that happened about a week after the previous letter's incident at the 75 River Street Bank vacant building occupation, where we were accused of criminal behavior for just being there, some of us. This has to do with going to the police station and, or actually going to the Parks and Rec Department to inquire into what this emergency was, and facing intimidation when we did. And I played some video or some audio of that. He and others asked you to describe the specific nature of the imminent threat that required the evacuation order and subsequent massive police destruction of the San Lorenzo Park campground on that date under your direction. His attempt and that of others to inquire at the Parks and Recreation office on Church Street was discouraged by your personal presence and that of a phalanx of officers, as well as the peculiar midday closing of that office and other city offices at a time when they would normally have been open for business. He advised me that in the early afternoon of December 8th, you subsequently attempted to discourage him from witnessing a group of six police officers surrounding and improperly interrogating a photographer. I played the audio of that on this show. The photographer documenting the protest march of which Mr. Norris was a part was trying to photograph and document the massive police presence under your direction on the City Hall side of Church Street. This incident happened shortly after you refused to provide information about the property seized and or destroyed by your department at San Lorenzo Park and crossed the street to the City Hall side. When Mr. Norris attempted to do the same, to more closely witness what he described as the harassing behavior of your officers toward the photographer, you threatened him with arrest for, quote, jaywalking. As you must know, Church Street between Chestnut and Center has no traffic lights. Nor, Mr. Norris tells me, was there any oncoming traffic. Hence, according to his account, you were only according special privileges to yourself to jaywalk, or to walk across the street, which isn't really jaywalking, but also threatening him with a non-existent crime in order to deter witnessing police officers intimidating a photographer who was trying to document their excessive use of force at City Hall, or excessive presence at City Hall. Subsequently, a group of six other police officers converged on Mr. Norris at the corner of Center and Church. He told me he was witnessing and audioing two motorcycle officers detaining and interrogating a pair of bicyclists for going through a stop sign next to City Hall grounds. In both these instances, you were either personally present or nearby in full police regalia with the officers involved under your direction. Please consider this a formal complaint about your behavior, which needs to be examined independently by the independent police auditor, who isn't really independent, to avoid even the appearance of a conflict of interest. Our preference is that the city manager appoint an independent professional not tied to the local government to provide a fair and objective overview of your actions. Sincerely, and the attorney I'm looking to send this is Kate Wells. We're working on this together and seeing if she's up for doing that. She's in the middle of all kinds of other things, but in the past, she's done this sort of thing, and also she's one of the two attorneys that's representing me in the case of the mock Nazi salute city council repression case that generated so much national publicity over the last, God, it's 10 years now, where the city council said, you can't make a silent two-second, don't act like a bunch of fascists salute, or we'll bar you from city council, and if you fail to leave, we'll arrest you. So, let's take a musical break from this dour recitation of old stories, and then get back to, some more protests.
My classroom was always a showcase. In those days, we did it ourselves. With colorful pictures and charts on the wall. A snowman in winter, a pumpkin in fall. And all my supplies were in neat little piles on the shelves. My children were always examples. When the principal came, they would rise. If I had to leave them a minute or two, they always found something constructive to do. And all of them sat in their places according to size. But kids don't know how to behave anymore. Ask them to rise and they'll ask you what for. They write on the walls and they sit on the floor. It's called informality now. They want me to teach in a classroom like that, but nobody tells me how. I made a big thing about spelling, but they learned by the time I got through. They copied the words till they knew them by heart. 10 times for the dumb ones and 2 for the smart. And gold stars were given to those who made sentences too. But nobody teaches them spelling today. Who has the time between weaving and play? The words they can write, I'm embarrassed to say. They're free to express themselves now. The way I've been teaching for 41 years is no longer effective, or so it appears. Well, damn it, it worked for me then, so what's wrong with it now? They say I'm supposed to keep up with the times, but nobody ever tells me how.
Un mejor día vendrá, un mejor día vendrá, cuando Dios a los pobres un lugar dará, cuando madura la tarde, vuelvo cansado a mi hogar. Soñando un futuro, olvido dolor y pesar. ¿Dónde se ha ido mi vida? ¿Dónde se ha ido mi juventud? Perdidas en las palabras que el viento me trae. Un día mejor vendrá, un mejor día vendrá, un mejor día vendrá, cuando Dios a los pobres un lugar dará.
That's two more from working. Nobody tells me how, and un mejor día vendrá. From the new musical, new, let's say, 20 years ago. Actually, was it 20 years ago? I think it was 30 years ago now. Boy, getting into the old stuff. Let's get back to the old protest, and who knows, maybe we'll get a call from a couple of old people on the phone. 427-3772 is the call-in number, 427-FRSC, 427-3772, and you will get in touch with me. Also, we're being directed here in the studio to ask for money at every opportunity, because in a month and a half, we're going to run out of money here at Free Radio. So if you want to continue to hear me rant on and play these sappy tunes from yesteryear and occasionally bits of protest from yesterday, the protest at the jail, the noise at noon protest on behalf of Gary Johnson and others being held there, send bucks. You can contact us at the freakradio.org website, freakradio.org, or you can mail in some bucks to Free Radio Santa Cruz, Post Office Box 7811-95061. Think about it. Or just do it. Hey. So, let's hear some more from the Noisemakers.
12 o'clock. So Joy has advised us in an inner vehicle that the news media may be showing up. Occupy Humanity, Your Humanity, is what her bumper sticker says.
All right, now we're talking.
Wait, you've been relieved.
It's not.
We have an inmate who's... Do you like our noise?
Yeah, your noise is good.
And what's your first name?
Mardessa.
And how did it... have you heard this kind of demonstration before?
Of course.
Really?
Yeah.
So, and have you been incarcerated here for a while?
No.
Are you working
that
here?
That thing even on?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, no, I'm getting community service.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
A few other Occupy.
That was actually somebody in a sort of a jumpsuit of one kind or another. I think it was a green jumpsuit who passed by us and seemed to be appreciating the protest. Indeed, the people who looked out and came out were not unfriendly, although the deputies maintained a stiff posture, the very few that we saw. And there was one woman who came out of Blaine Street who was not at all sympathetic, and she had a little name tag around her neck. But the people who were looked like the people doing the shit work there were smiling and even giving us the V sign, several of them, the victory sign. So, well, maybe you can think there's hope there.
Santa Cruz folks are showing up. Jay and Joy, looks like Paul has shown up, labor organizer guy. So, Angel, you say that you have, suffered some consequences to...
Absolutely.
..the presence of being at 75 River Street, as many of us were. I visited that occupation for sure. And you said that you think... Well, what have the police done recently?
Okay, so there is this one officer in particular, and I don't know his name yet. The first incident that I had with him was when we were on a march. I was walking towards the outside of the crowd, and I looked over my shoulder, and I seen him, coming up behind me about 10 feet, in his SUV. So I moved over to the right. I gave him, at least 3 feet of clearance, probably maybe 3.5-4 feet of clearance so he can get past me. And, there was a couple other witnesses who seen this. He kept eye contact with me, and he veered his SUV into me like if he was going to hit me, and he got, I'd say, about 1.5 feet away. At that point, I was so infuriated, I yelled at him. I yelled some profanity, and, I was just so caught up in the moment. I basically challenged him. Since then, he's seen me out here on the street, just in public.
You're a police officer.
He's a police officer. I'm not sure what his status is. We've seen each other a couple times in public, and first time he came up to me, hey, you've got warrants. And I says, well, no, I don't. I believe I'm code 4. And he retorted with, well, not yet, you don't, just wait. And so, I chose to ignore him and keep moving. And about another three nights ago, I was downtown, and he seen me there again, and he pulled over his car and yelled to me out his window, "Hey, you've got warrants." And you know, I retorted back, "Well, if I've got warrants, you know, do your job, arrest me, you know." And
love you guys. If I don't see you again, we'll see you when
he pulled over and you know, stayed in his car for a couple minutes, and then you know, and then left. And you know, I believe, in my opinion, I believe he's harassing me and, you know, trying to use scare tactics for what I have no idea, saying that I have warrants when I do not. And in fact, if I happen to have any more negative contact with the guy, I'm going to ask him for his badge number and his information, so that way I can go down and file a formal complaint against him for harassment.
And actually, later in the day, Angel was stopped on Pacific Avenue and handcuffed and searched by police officers as part of a, I don't know, probation or parole stop and search. However, on the line with us is we have that man who probably needs to be searched. Who knows what kinds of contraband he's carrying? Steve Plaich. Hey, Steve.
I'm carrying the hopes and fears of the entire Occupy Santa Cruz movement on my shoulders. I'm more than ample shoulders.
I see. So you actually are at the General Assembly, or is it still going on?
Yeah, I've been here all night. We're just really talking about the various actions we're going to do. The candlelight vigil is going to be on the 15th, which is Sunday night. 6:30, we'll be over here at the Water Street Courthouse steps, and then we'll march over into town, I think somewhere around the downtown area on the mall with candles, and that's in support of kind of a pre-Martin Luther King celebration. There's the January 17th, as you know, is Occupy Congress. We're going to try to get some extra signage out here for that day. And then, of course, January 20th is Occupy the Courts. And we're planning a large, if we can do it, kind of an informational demonstration, protest, music, maybe a movie, and get some folks out talking about the constitutional amendment to abolish corporate personhood.
How does that occupy the courts means what in Santa
Cruz?
Well,
that's just a national occupy. It's occupying the federal courts, and it's the 2-year anniversary of the Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission ruling by the United States Supreme Court that allowed corporations to give with both hands to any political cause or campaign they like without limitation.
Right, so in
that
other words,
somehow unbalances the electoral playing field.
Yeah, no. We all agree with that. But the courts locally are much more notorious and well-known recently for criminalizing Occupy Santa Cruz people, wouldn't you say?
Well, that's why we'll be here instead of the federal court in San Jose to make sure that that is known throughout the community.
I see. So your issue is not simply going to be this sort of general national blasé. It's not blasé, but it's not local to Santa Cruz. You're going to actually focus on, are you going to name names? Are you going to call out Judge Gallagher, that sort of thing? What are your plans?
Well, you can come down. You're a member of Occupy Santa Cruz. You can come down and name whatever names you like. We do support autonomous action. But no, it's basically something, and our working group right now is envisioning it as a singularly Occupy Santa Cruz event. You know, we certainly want to be in support with things that are done nationally. We're in support of Occupy Wall Street. We're in support of Occupy Oakland. We're in support of Occupy Santa Cruz. But my personal opinion, I don't speak for Occupy Santa Cruz, you know, is Occupy Santa Cruz is different and it's unique. And we need to do things that really define who we are. And as we move forward to the new year, we have to pick our own initiatives. We have to focus on what we think we can get done and move forward with that.
Well, I know that you've been causing trouble. I understand your name came up at a city council closed session 2 days ago. A lawsuit that you against you and the city by the city has been, I guess they're holding you responsible for a campground or some such thing, and that's gone to federal court. Even though the campground has been destroyed by the police department, Martin Bernal, Dennett Shoemaker, and all those other unindicted criminals who are engaging in that kind of behavior, you nonetheless are the person who's being considered in some way culpable here. What's going on?
Along with as a result of the permit that was issued and the occupation and the encampment there at the Benchlands that continued throughout November and in December, The city sued me individually and Occupy Santa Cruz to abate what they considered that to be a public nuisance. And Ed and I, Ed on behalf of Occupy Santa Cruz and me on behalf of myself, moved that case, as you know, to the federal court. And we just finished briefing the issue to the federal courts. And they'll make a decision about whether or not they'll retain jurisdiction over what we believe are the remaining constitutional issues. The fact that the encampment no longer exists and the public nuisance really couldn't really be proved by any evidence you could admit in court is doesn't necessarily make the litigation moot. The constitutional claims that Ed and I both made on our counterclaim are still something that we believe should be determined by the federal court and give us an opportunity to go up and talk about First Amendment issues or freedom of speech, freedom of assembly. Ed will probably be able to talk about Ninth Amendment right to sleep and those things. So I think those things are very much still before the federal court, and we believe that that's, they should retain jurisdiction.
So the attempt of Danette Shoemaker and Martine Bernal and Police Chief Vogel to kind of crush this issue very quickly on December 8th by running off all the homeless folks, 100 to 200 of them, and destroying their property, much of it, sequestering the rest, and arresting, I guess, 6 to 8 people, charging them on $25,000 bail, and then suddenly the next day, with all the charges disappearing and the bail disappearing, that whole attempt is futile, that there is still going to be a chance for there to be constitutional issues that will support a campground in the San Lorenzo Park area?
Yeah, you have to remember that it was their choice to sue us, and so now we have an opportunity in federal court to speak to our issues, and you know, that's something, you know, that once you decide that to launch that kind of litigation, commence that litigation, then you have to see it through, and so that's kind of where we are.
Well, but, you know, practically speaking, with getting past all the legal gobbledygook, is there a chance in hell, if the courts rule in your favor, that, well, for example, you set up a tent in the San Lorenzo Benchland campground area after that is over, in order to not just assert your theoretical right, but to actually have a practical right to be there?
I think in a perfectly legally reasoned world, the federal court might find that the benchlands and San Lorenzo Park particularly is a traditional public forum, and in traditional public fora are accorded much greater constitutional protection, because the city would have to find a compelling public policy.
You're not answering my question. Are you going to get a tent out there? You're going to set up a teepee out there? What's going on there, Blage?
Well, we have to wait until what happens with the litigation. We get the right, results. Who knows what'll happen? But you know,
well, I understand
those
teepees. The teepee set up, and I think masterminded by Robert Blind Bear Facer, who I heard from recently in an email, by the way.
Oh yeah, I saw that email myself.
Yeah, actually, I got a second one. But he. You know, those 23-foot poles that were set up may still be in the custody of the police. Are you going to go in as a champion of the people that we know you are and demand that the police return those poles to their rightful owner?
I will have to take that under advisement and see if I can fit that into my very busy schedule. As you know, I am a man of the people, but also a very busy man. So.
Indeed. Now, there was a second case that came before City Council that also seemed to involve Occupy Santa Cruz on the closed agenda of City Council. I know you and I spoke, and you said City Attorney Barisoni, all he does is comes out and says, well, we're considering the case. We made a report on it, and it was being considered for further action. But what, in fact, was the second case, and what's going on with the other case against Occupy Santa Cruz?
Well, that case was filed. In order for us to get into court on temporary restraining order to try to save the camp, when the evacuation notice was issued, we had to file a complaint. You can't really go in and get a temporary restraining order in a vacuum. You have to have an underlying complaint. So Ed and I drafted a complaint against the city and against actually the Santa Cruz Police Department to base that request for temporary restraining order on. Right now, the city, I'm sure, is contemplating whether or not they want to answer that complaint. They're just more or less within the time that they are required to answer the complaint. So we'll just have to wait and see.
If they, I mean, this is all kind of, you know, it seems to be, you know, we're all arguing over the corpse here. But, I mean, the ruins. But if they do go in to contest this, is this an opportunity to reveal the hollowness of their claim that there was an imminent emergency that required an evacuation order?
Well, I suspect that if the case is litigated, and as I say, the case is still pending before the court, the evidence that would be presented in court would be whether or not there was an imminent threat to life that required the evacuation notice to be issued, you know, whether or not that particular administrative code section had any application to the activity that was going on down there in the benchlands. And evidence would be admissible as to whatever conditions were existing down there, and in fact, whatever actions that were taken by the city and the police department. So, you know, who's to say? I mean, you could probably, a pretty wide-ranging area of evidence could be admitted.
So if it's shown that there was no imminent emergency, would the police and the city then be liable for all the damages created, the dispersal of people, the injuries possibly, the lack of shelter that resulted, the medical conditions, the loss of property? Would the city then be liable for all those things?
I'm not really recalling what our prayer for relief was. Mostly it was grounded in the request for temporary restraining order. We may have asked for some compensation. I think you can always go back in and amend your complaint to get compensation according to proof at time of trial. So, yeah, I mean, arguably you could do that, but that's, you know, something that we really can't make any determination about until they decide whether or not they're going to answer the complaint. If they don't, then we could take a default, in which case then we could go in and ask for some kind of a judgment. But that judgment, of course, would be according to proof. So it really gets very complicated in terms of what legal proof would be required to justify any kind of compensation award issued by the court.
You know, I know that you and Ed Fry have been kind of carrying the ball here, though you're not yourself, a practicing attorney. You are nonetheless been providing a lot of legal support to homeless people, which you do every Monday night, as I understand it, 5 to 7 at the homeless meal at the Red Church at Church and actually it's at Lincoln and
also,
Lincoln and Cedar.
Fridays from 1 to 3 at the Homeless Services Center.
But this puts a lot of pressure on you, and you are trying to hold down numerous other responsibilities. At least you claim to be a suicide prevention guy.
You
claim to be a needle exchange man.
You know,
and I don't necessarily dispute that, although I've never seen any needles in your hand, nor have I seen anybody attempting suicide around you. So I don't entirely know exactly this is true. But I know that you're a very busy guy, that you're involved in numerous meetings around the city, and of course you're running for city council, which of course counts against you.
Perhaps
in my book,
we're undecided at this point, but
really,
something I'm thinking about.
Again.
I'm in the undecided category.
Whoa, this could be. This is big news. Are you no longer running? It's not Steve Plaich for city council. What is going on here? This is
we're undecided at this point. So it depends on what kind of support I can expect, what kind of endorsements. And a lot of it is whether or not I can raise enough money to actually put on a campaign that might have a chance of getting, you know how that goes.
Maybe Citizens United can help you out in that regard.
Perhaps. You never know. Anyway, I have to get back to my meeting here. They're just adjourning. So are you finishing up your show?
I've got a little while longer to go, and I have a few other things I wanted to ask you, but if you have to go, I certainly wouldn't want to stay you from your appointed rounds.
Yeah, I should get back, and I have another
meeting.
Let me
just ask you, anything coming up in the next few days that people may not be aware of that they might want to attend? You mentioned some Occupy Santa Cruz events, a Candlelight Vigil on Sunday, is it?
Candlelight Vigil on Sunday. We'll be meeting here at the Water Street Protest at 6:30. That should be a terrific event.
Any other issues, DSAL, any reports of a sudden homeless encampment springing up that people should be supporting, things of that sort?
No, not right offhand. We do have, I think there should be some kind of an announcement about the home that we're occupying that's being foreclosed upon on Mission Street. But that word will come out at some point. And there's also several other actions that we're planning, as I said, Occupy Congress, Occupy the Courts. So, you know, we're getting as much visibility and awareness as we can, but, you know, every day is a struggle.
What about
every day is a challenge.
The woe-begotten Gary Johnson, what of him?
Mike D., as you know, also made another announcement this evening that he wants to have a noisy rally every Wednesday at noon in support of Gary Johnson, so that was put to the General Assembly, and it was more of a discussion issue tonight, but I think that when we discuss it further, either on Saturday or Sunday, the GA will probably consent on whoever wants to be involved, and we will support Gary in whatever way we can. And one of those ways is to join Mike D in a noisy rally beginning after the Huff meeting on Wednesdays, proceeding from the Sub Rosa Cafe, which is, I understand, where you're going to be having your meetings now, over to the jail in support of Gary.
Indeed. Any word from Ed Fry, Gary's lawyer, as to how Gary's doing in stir?
No, I haven't seen Ed the last couple of general assemblies, so I really don't know. I hope he's doing well. We're with him in our thoughts, so, you know.
Well, I appreciate that you're taking some time on the air, Steve Plage, even though you may no longer be running for city council.
Not making any hasty decisions. We're just kind of mulling. I sent an email to my good friend Kevin Moon today, told him I was mulling a city council, another city council run. So
indeed.
Perhaps that's the breaking news.
Well, thank you again, and Steve, do keep us advised about, you know, the possibility of homeless people being able to, regain their property and get some kind of
right.
compensation in small claims court, because we've talked about it, that issue off the air, you
yeah.
and I.
Yeah, I think we'll be able to do something. We just have to kind of move forward with that and get as much information as we can, but we'll get something done.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, take care.
Can I give out your number on the air? Well, I think I can, because he has, in fact, allowed that in the past. If you want to reach Steve directly to talk to him more, and that man is a fast talker, even faster than I am, his number is 466-6078. That's a change from a previous number. 466-6078 is the number for Steve Plage, rhymes with H, who may not be running for city council, which, in my mind, is actually a good thing, not a bad thing, because politicians are, shall we say, intrinsically untrustworthy in the sense that they seem to be, they have other objectives than, holding office becomes, or gaining office, and retaining it becomes a major consideration. So, let's return to interviews from the street recently, this last week. We have about 20 minutes left before the show collides with Uncle Dennis's From the Cream to the Dregs. I'm going to take a quick look at my incoming mail to see if there's been a flood of concern of one sort or another that I want to bring forth here. So I'll let you know what the, you know, your email messages, rnorris3@hotmail.com is a place to go in case you got something you might want to pass on. And let's see what we've got here. One of our listeners suggests that the Working musical is a sappy musical. My response, of course, was to say, call me a sap. And the listener responds, I will share some of my sappy stuff someday. That's the level we've deteriorated to on this show. It's sappy, slappy, back and forth. And I guess just where we're at the moment. But luckily, I have audio tapes to fall back on, which is what I'm going to do right now. That's a little bit more of that, and then we'll see what happens next.
Sure, let me know if you see him. I'm curious to know who this is.
Absolutely.
We've been talking with him. Angel. Thanks, Angel.
Thank you.
So as we walk back, and it's about 1:10, I notice their orange mesh is still up not only around the courthouse areas near the Occupy Santa Cruz protest that was held there and still has its general assemblies there at 6 o'clock at night, but also the area that used to be the San Lorenzo campground. The orange mesh is up, and there are signs in yellow, area closed, no trespassing, site under renovation.
Okay, yeah.
And I suppose someone can theoretically argue that the grass there is a bit sparser than the grass on the other side of the fence, but not much.
The point being that large areas of previously public space have been meshed away from the public in order to what? Protect the grass, regrow the grass. It's not really even explicitly stated, or simply to keep people away from areas where previously political hotspots. It may have some sentimental memories and or some angry memories for people who believe that They have the right to be in those spaces, and they can't simply be driven out by armed gunmen in uniform waving pieces of paper at them and threatening them with arrest. That's not the way that it's supposed to be.
Well, my concern would be that this might be considered a form of political enclosure or setting up forbidden zones where people are not allowed to go for fear that a campground may be reestablished. Meanwhile, in San Lorenzo Park, on the upper area, next to the lawn bowling.
Hey!
Yeah, sure.
Stay left.
Oh, my God.
There are some campers who are communicating at a distance.
And actually, they weren't campers. They were just folks who looked a little ragged, who I might characterize as appearing to be homeless, so that's a stereotype. And when I talked to them, they said they actually had housing, but they came there during the day. Some of them did. Others, however, had other reports.
We are speaking with... We're talking with...
Gayla.
Gayla. And you say you're not outside yourself, but you have been getting reports.
Back outside.
You're about to be, but you've gotten reports about people being ticketed?
Harassed. Made to move. People are still losing their stuff. Single women that are like in their 60s and 70s don't want to go to the armory because there's no female monitors working up there to do the security, so the women feel unsafe.
Yeah.
Also, being outnumbered 6-1 will make you not want to go up there.
Hey, why is that?
Okay. Why is that? Because older women, usually they come from either a domestic violence situation or a situation out here where they've had an abusive maybe ex-boyfriend or husband or some type of situation, and they're afraid to be around a bunch of men. And it's nothing personal, but I've been there, done that, and that's one of the reasons I hooked up with Occupy, because I want to make a difference for the homeless people out here that, you know, how many are dying every day somewhere in the nation. I mean, people are freezing back in New York, literally dropping like flies. And the same thing's going to happen out here. I just went to Memorial 3 weeks ago, and the average age for a homeless person is 49.
So where are all people?
That's the average death age of a homeless person. The homeless death age is 49.
Gone, who are at the River Street campground. I'm at the San Lorenzo campground.
A lot of people are moving around. They move their campsites every day because they don't want to be harassed or ticketed or lose their belongings, which is everything they've got in life.
Charming. We've been talking with...
Gayla Foss.
Thanks, Gayla. Interview, Perth Dreda. Dreda, you say you have a special way of dealing with the problems of sleeping and sleep criminalization in Santa Cruz?
Well, I'm just lucky I found a place where the owners don't mind me sleeping in their doorway. It's not really that easy here. It's kind of rough. I kind of keep myself away from the police by staying in the park all day, just not dealing with myself, not really dealing with anyone else because there's a lot of idiots around. And I go to a coffee shop at night, get on my computer, and then I go to this doorway and crash, and then I come back here and run the whole same routine, just chilling in the park. I'm trying to get a little more exercise though to lose some weight, but yeah.
You look like you may have lost a little. Huh?
Yeah, I'm working on it.
What's happened with most people from the San Lorenzo campground, you know?
Not exactly sure. They're all going around. Like, I see you with a couple people, and I see other people at other places, but to get it reorganized again would be interesting. And I'd like to see us get a place to camp, a legal place to camp, you know, one or two places. I'd prefer two places, one for people who just do nothing or smoke just marijuana, and another place for people who need other medicines for their diet. You know what I'm saying?
Heroin, meth, that sort of thing.
Yeah, all that stuff.
So, have you heard of people getting a lot of tickets, or has that not been happening?
Yeah, they're running around giving tickets out. Yeah, that has
sleeping or
up.
For other things?
Sleeping. I've actually got a couple sleeping tickets, but nothing big or major.
Since the dispersal of the San Lorenzo Ranchlands campground?
Yes, I've gotten about one or two tickets since then.
And what were the circumstances of that? Of those ticketing?
Sleeping in a closed area, which was underneath that that bridge over there. I forget the name of it. That's
SoCal Street Bridge.
SoCal, yeah. And one was for sleeping in front of the Boys and Girls Club and not being up and out of there at 6 in the morning or something. I don't know.
Was it trespass or was it sleeping ban violation?
One was trespassing, and one was sleeping.
So, are people using the homeless lack of services center waiting list in order to avoid sleeping tickets? Because it said if you get on the waiting list, they'll eliminate the tickets once you get them.
Yeah, I believe a lot of people are doing that. I've been here 8 years, and they're just tired of dealing with me, and I'm not really causing a problem, so they're just leaving me alone.
Any final words for folks out there?
Try to get together and find a place.
And the tape ran out, but as the tape ran out, we got a call from our very own dead-on David Silva. Dead-on, but not dead. Hey there, David.
Not dead, not yet, not soon either. I'm 68 years old, and I got another 60 to go. Just call me the street commissioner, and, you know, I am so exhausted. This is such a hard life. Robert, I'm so glad you're there. The only bright spot I saw in the whole day today of, like, conquering all these bureaucracies and trying to get my foot in a household is... This newspaper article about the cops don't know where to cut when the city council told them to go ahead and cut, and they got to cut. They're going to cut the cops. Hey, good. They get the cops. That means the homeless will have some peace. Let's have peace for the homeless for a little while at least. We didn't have it for Christmas.
I think that article, which came out of the Tuesday shitty council meeting, talked about they were backing off on cuts. They said they only had targets rather than actual cuts.
Yeah. Bernal, what the hell does that mean? They kind of have the odd target ought to be leave the homeless alone, and that'll save them a lot of money.
Well, you know, I know this is an issue that you've been carrying for more than a decade.
I've experienced it personally now. I'm telling you, it's evil. There's like Nazis. Especially that first alarm group. But no matter what authority you're bounced to, you're bounced from one to the other. They kick you from one to the other. You know, they kick your sleeping bag. They're horrible human beings. And we're paying them salaries and giving them incentives to be that way. We got to stop it. Stop torturing the homeless, and you'll save a lot of money.
And what's your situation now? Are you outside? Or are you inside?
I'm almost in a home. I'm looking for the deposit right now, and I just got 2/3 of it just a couple hours ago, and I'm really, really excited. It looks like we may be able to make it.
Excellent.
Yeah. But my godchild's been in the hospital for 2 days, and I'm worried to death.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, you know, it's been hard. It's hard. You know, so we don't need these cops. You know, shit, people are more decent to each other than when there's cops around. As soon as cops are on, everything will get better. If they want to be somewhere, why don't they be, like, at the end of the footbridge behind Denny's down there just to hang out there and save a few lives for a change?
And how would they do that?
By not getting people in drug deals stabbed.
Hmm. So,
at least make some kind of sense. But going around pestering and harming and kicking and bouncing homeless people around, that's just disgraceful. It's like a Nazi nightmare we've been living in. Cut the cops. Cut their budget 2/3.
You came from another city. How did your previous place compare with here in terms of police behavior?
Well, I came from one county for 4 years where the police were very, very Stalinistic and, you know, rigid, but they were human beings. And then the other place was sort of like mafia, Aryan Swamphead Mafia run. And there you just can't trust anything. You know, it's really, really hard. You know, you don't know if you're going to get killed or not. I feel like I escaped from there. And I expected more from Santa Cruz. I didn't expect to be treated like this when I was here. I can't believe it. I'm ashamed of Santa Cruz that they allow police to behave this way. I'm ashamed of Santa Cruz.
And thank you, David, for the call-in. That puts us pretty close to the end of the show, but let's hear a little bit more from Dreadeye, the interview I was having with him. I guess it was just yesterday. Dreadeye actually was a guy who was kind of a leading figure in the campground. He often spoke to the media, the San Lorenzo campground, before it was raised by the police department on December 8th. And he's described how he sleeps in doorways now, goes to coffee shops at night, is looking for another place to set up a campground. And let's hear what he has to say.
Camp, we do need to pull something together for the people who can't afford houses and cars and things that want to live here.
And we've been talking with
Dreadeye.
Thank you, Dreadeye.
Sure.
So we're talking with
Sean Olson.
And Sean, you're sitting here in front of Marini's with a a coffee cup with a few coins in front of you, and you say you recently got a ticket?
Yes.
For what? Tell me about that.
Well, I was sat in one spot where you were allowed to sit. Please come stand right behind me so I can't make no money and then tell me to move, even though they just said I've got an hour of sitting there. I moved. They left. I went a couple of feet down from where I was sat. They came and gave me a ticket for panhandling within 100 feet of my last panhandling place.
You know, actually, I think they are in error. First, of course, the law sucks. That's bullshit. But they are actually violating the actual law itself, which I happen to have a copy of right here. So you say normally you're outside the gap?
Yes.
But on this occasion, you moved elsewhere because that location was taken?
Yes.
Yeah, again, it seems to me the key to dealing with this code section, and this is for people who are listening, not so much for you, because you've already been screwed with it, but that is, before an hour is up, move your device 3 feet. And then when the cop comes back, you can say, no, it's been moved. Here's the original spot. It's been moved 3 feet. Come back in an hour, and you can tell me to move if you'd like. And then you move. Then in 50 minutes, you move it another 3 feet. But you apparently had it for there for an hour, and therefore you are a criminal, and I can't talk to you.
No, but I wasn't even there an hour.
So if you weren't there an hour...
I was only there for about 10 minutes.
And this is, of course, a discussion of... You're actually not... There's no limits on panhandling. What there are limits are on what's called display devices, a very kind of slimy, clever tactical trick used by the city attorney, which actually covers... A cup for a panhandler, an open guitar case for a musician, a political table for a person who's a tabling. Any display device is only allowed to be, if you have to move a display device every hour, or a police officer can tell you after an hour that you have to be at least 100 feet away from where you were before. You can't set up another display device in that initial spot. Within 24 hours, for 24 hours. But the flaw in the law is that if you move before the hour is up, only a small distance, say 3 or 4 feet, then you when they comes back and say you have to move because you have been here for more than an hour, you can say no, I haven't. I moved. I'm in a new spot, and that in fact makes you technically within the law, or at least so it was seen by the actual wording of the law. Now. What will the judges say? How will the police treat you? Will you be loved by the mayor? Well, these are all questions to which I have no answer. I do, however, have an update from Fresno. I actually just came in on the hotmail here. City of Fresno continues to destroy homeless people's property by Mike Rhodes. Multiple City of Fresno departments coordinated the latest raid on the homeless, taking people's chairs, mattresses, anything that could be used as a cushion on the sidewalk, sleeping bags, and couches. This attack took place on Santa Clara between E and F streets in Fresno, where many homeless people have ended up in the aftermath of cleanups, which have taken place, cleanups is in quotes, since October 27th last year. Francis Sanchez is a picture of a woman looking a little... with a very faint, with sadness in her eyes, but a sort of a half smile on her face, said that the city of Fresno took her couch this morning. It wasn't much, but that is all I had to sleep on. Now it's gone. Sanchez is one of about 100 people, homeless people, currently living on Santa Clara Street in downtown Fresno. Santa Clara is the street in front of the Poverello House, a homeless center where Big Sue died on December 28th. Big Sue died while sleeping on the sidewalk in front of the POV, following the raids by city workers who took and destroyed homeless people's property. Other homeless people on Santa Clara describe how the police came, followed by someone who took their shopping carts, and then the sanitation department, who took things that would allow them to live more comfortably. Sanchez said they took people's chairs, mattresses, anything that can be used as a cushion on the sidewalk, sleeping bags, and other people's couches. Big Sue's funeral will take place on Saturday, January 14th at 11 a.m. Participants will assemble on Santa Clara Street, west of F Street, where Big Sue will join us. She will come home to Santa Clara Street and stop at her memorial for a few minutes. Participants will walk behind Big Sue's hearse to the homeless church near San Benito and Broadway for her service at approximately noon. The service will be followed by a lunch repast served to the guests of honor, the homeless of Fresno. And Big Sue's death And there's a picture of her. I don't know if I ever met her. I might have when I was in Fresno 3 years ago or so, 4 years ago, when the homelessness marathon, which happens every year and is coming up, would be coming up again in February. I think it's being postponed this year till the fall. But I was there with activist Becky Johnson, kind of in memory and in celebration of the successful Fresno Kincaid lawsuit. Although Kincaid, the main woman, Pam Kincaid, died shortly thereafter in a questionable incident. But that successful lawsuit provided $2.3 million, nearly $2.5 million to the homeless of Fresno. Here's the last interview with Big Sue. We'll play that right now. Or attempt to, anyway. I think it's coming down. Here we go.
Hold on. Okay, now let's go.
I think this was done just to be shitheads. And there was no criteria for what goes and what went. And they were going to take women's stuff who put their camp up every day and toss it because she wasn't right there.
Did they give you...
And this is an interview that was conducted by Robert, not me, another Robert, on December 15th, right after the city of Fresno police and sanitation workers came through Santa Clara and F Street area taking and destroying homeless people's property.
Guys, any notice that they was going to move anything today?
No.
They did not?
No.
So this morning you just
and
saw...
And they came last night and turned the lights on the people with the tents and didn't do anything. They drove away.
Okay.
They went up and down the street twice. I watched them.
Okay.
And this morning they came. And it was only supposed to be the tents down and the tarps, which we knew. And nothing tied to the fence, technically. Okay.
We're going
to take Michelle's stuff and throw it, and she has all of her, that's her daily luggage that she needed, and it was picked up. It
Michelle
was
what? What's Michelle's name? You know Michelle's last name?
No, but...
And we'd like to know your name, too, your full name, because...
Big Sue, Sharon Alita Bob, everybody knows.
Okay, all right. What else you want to say?
I think the police officers need to have their yearly psychological review because it looked to me like they were getting off on this little activity today.
Okay.
And there were times when certain officers were standing around watching people grab their poor little blankets and stuff that it took them 2 weeks to collect. And
they
got off on it.
Yes, today.
They need to go and have psychological evaluation because we do not want them policing the streets in that kind of a state of mind where they think it's funny to fuck with somebody.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay, ma'am. This we want to say this also. Today is December the 15th, 2011. We also filmed earlier today of a young man being rolled out of his bed in his sleep and by the cleanup crew, and they did not realize that there was somebody sleeping in there, and they rolled him over on the ground. So this is the same day of all these things that happened.
They don't have megaphones in the car. They could have announced it.
Yes.
They did not have to put their hands on anybody.
That's right.
And I don't like not having the criteria for what was going to go, that each individual officer, I feel, was just doing what he thought he wanted to get his jollies.
That's right. Something needs to seriously be done.
The officers on the first sweep did not act this way at all.
And they took all the wood.
Thank you.
And they took your wood?
Yes.
Oh, that's a pisser.
All they're going to do is got it.
And that was Big Sue in Fresno. You can hear that interview and read more about Big Sue at Santa Cruz, I should say, Central Valley, Indy Bay. Big Sue was homeless. The context of her death is it comes as the city of Fresno has destroyed all the homeless encampments in the downtown area. So many homeless people like her have no choice but to sleep on the sidewalk. The temperature in Fresno on the morning Big Sue died was 30 degrees. Many other homeless people have caught pneumonia since the destruction of their shelters. Indy Media is attempting to find out how many more homeless people have died in the aftermath of the city's most recent attack against them. It's worth noting that the city of Fresno, unlike in previous years, did not set up warming centers for the homeless this year. The warming centers, if they were available, might have saved Big Sue's life. And there's more on this. Again, go online to check it out under Big Sue by Mike Rhodes, Central Valley Indy Media. And I want to remind people that the destruction of the homeless campground in Santa Cruz, and we now have near freezing temperatures going on every night, is a similar situation here and one that we have responsibility for here. Entering the studio, however, is a man who does have a warm home to go to, but unfortunately he has lost his majority on the Sierra Club.